During the next hour and then tomorrow at this same time, I'll be sharing today on the subject of obedience and tomorrow on the subject of the Lordship of Jesus Christ. And what I would like to do would be combine these and give kind of a two-message series. And today, I would like to sort of lay the foundation, the groundwork, sort of dig the basement, and then tomorrow build a superstructure. So today will be primarily just a time to lay a foundation for what we're talking about, and then tomorrow go into a superstructure. Now, even though today is mostly just foundational, I'll try to make a point, some point. You know, last time I was in Oklahoma City, I was sharing in a fellowship in somebody's home. I forget what it was. I think I was sharing 1 Thessalonians 2 and 3, or 2, and then we got back into 1 or something. I forget what the night was. And so when it was over, Gene says, "Well, great, but what was your point?" Well, I didn't have many points. I just kind of went down the chapter. So I'll try to make a point today of some kind, even though it's a foundational session for tomorrow. Okay, James 1, beginning with verse 22. "But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any man be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is likened to a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed." Now, I've read that passage a number of times, but a few weeks ago, well, I guess a few months ago now, I was reading it over, and I was struck by the phrase, "the perfect law of liberty." And I thought to myself, I don't normally associate law with liberty. I associate law with thou shalt not, and I associate liberty with go ahead. And so I began to ponder this thing, the perfect law of liberty. Back in 1956, I was living with Ken Smith over here, who was visiting with four of his staff. Ken is the director of Christian education for his denomination, and he's a buddy of mine. He's showed up here for the morning with four of his men. And I had the privilege of living in Ken Smith's home. At the time, he was a pastor in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And my wife and I were the area representatives there, and Ken was very interested in navigator work, so he had a great big manse and occupied one room in it. And so when the navigators moved to town, we moved in with him. It provided free rent to the navigators and fellowship for Ken and fellowship for us, and it was a very happy couple years we spent there. And Ken will remember the night that I drove home, and I think it was a 1956 Dodge, first new car I ever owned in my life. This was a big deal. Went up to Detroit and brought the thing down, and it was quite a thing. About 3 in the morning, we got home, got everybody up. We all went for a ride around the block, and, you know, everyone was excited. I'd never had a new car before, and I didn't know, you know, quite how to handle one or what I was supposed to act like driving one, or I didn't know anything. But in this car, there was a manual in the glove compartment. And, of course, eager to learn everything, well, I opened the glove compartment and got this manual out. And it was full of information. It told me how much air to keep in the tires. Told me how often to grease this thing. Told me how much oil I was supposed to put in it and how often I was supposed to change the oil around in there so I wouldn't, you know, hurt the engine. And it told me how much water the thing held. And it told me how many cubic feet or inches or whatever it was, the trunk. I mean, it's just all kinds of information. But most of it was direction for me as to how to run this thing. What to do when. Now, my reaction wasn't, who do these people think they are telling me what to do with my car? I mean, after all, I bought that thing and I paid for it. Paid hard, cold cash for it, laid it right on the line. It's my car. I can do with this thing as I please. I mean, here are these people sent along this manual to try to tell me how much oil I'm supposed to. It's my car. I'll put as much oil as I blame please in this thing, and they can lump it. Or, repack the wheels, huh? I'll show them about repacking the wheels and putting grease in those wheels. It's my car. I can do whatever I please. Now, that wasn't exactly my reaction, because I had it figured out that the reason why these people knew what to tell me, they had made that car from scratch. They had started out with some metal and one thing and put together an automobile that would run. They had made it. They had designed it. They had dreamed it up. And now they had given it to me for my use, you see. Now, God invented life. It's all His idea. He made life, and He gave it to you. And He gave it to me. Now, along with that life, He gave me a manual. And this manual is to help me know how to live this life. He made it. He ought to know how to, you know, what would make it, how to make it go the best. The reason why they gave me this manual was that I might get the most trouble-free miles out of this vehicle. And that's what the Bible is all about. It's a manual that God has given us to show us how to get the most trouble-free miles out of a life that is to be lived for His glory. But many people have the idea that it's full of restrictions, and they complain about it, and they say, well, you know, the Bible, and it's always binding me here and restricting me here and all like this. Oh, no. That's not the objective at all. It's like the manual in your glove compartment to try to show you how to get. Because, you see, He made it. God made it. He invented life. Jesus said, I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. And the way we learn about the abundant life is through the perfect law of liberty. It lays out principles. There are eternal principles. There are standards. Imagine life without standards. You get down to the store to buy a pound of bacon. I'd like to buy a pound of bacon. Okay? Here, and he grabs some out of something and puts it on a piece of paper. Is that a pound? Well, it looks like a pound, so he tosses one other strip on it. Well, you know, how much is bacon? How much are you paying today? Well, I don't know. How much are you charging today? Well, let's see. I'd like to, you know. No, look, let's forget it. You put it on a scale, tell me how much bacon is, and I'll buy a pound of bacon. Well, I don't operate that way. Look, take off three strips. Now, do you like it? No, I'd rather, look, keep your dumb bacon. I'll go down here to somebody and sell me a pound of bacon. I'd like to buy a blue suit. Blue wool suit. Okay, how about this one? Is it wool? I don't know. Does it look like wool? Well, I can't tell wool from non-wool. Is it wool? Does anything on tell us what's wool or not? Well, kind of feels like wool. Well, whether it feels like wool or not, I'd like to buy a blue wool suit. You sell them? Well, here. How much is it? Would you pay $200? Oh, I'm not used to paying $200. What would you pay? $20. Look. So I go someplace else. You get down to run the race. What are we running? I don't know. What are we running? Is this a sprint or is this a mile or what is this? I don't know. Where's the goal line? I don't know. Where's the goal line? Oh, it's out yonder somewhere. Or maybe it's back that way. I see. By the way, that's what a lot of folks are advocating we do today, you know. But the Bible lays out for us God-given principles and standards that we need to make life work so that we can know good from evil. And this life of obedience to Jesus Christ is based upon a unique relationship. And until you understand this relationship with God, it can be a frustrating, dull thing. It may be good for you, but it'll be like eating Wheaties without cream and sugar, you know. It's okay, it's in there, but it sure didn't go down too well. See, when Jesus said, when ye pray, say, Our Father, He was laying out something that is so great that we can hardly comprehend it. I go into a restaurant, and I sit down. And the waitress comes over with a menu and a glass of water. And so she puts the water down with her thumb in the water. And she takes it out and she says, what do you have? Well, I say, for openers, how about one without the thumb? Let's start there, and then we'll go from there. Oh, she says, I'm sorry, you know, I've had a hard day, and I didn't really think about it. I'm sorry, sir. And so she brings one without the thumb, and then we go. I go home at night. I've been out beating that highway, you know. I run up and down these mountains from one section to the other. So I've been out, and it's been a long old day, and I go home, and I'm tired, and dinner isn't quite ready, so I go and flop on the Danforth. I'm really tired. And I'm hot. And here's little Randy over here fiddling around, so I think, boy, a glass of water sure tastes good about now. So I say, Randy, how about a glass of water for your old dad? Sure, Dad. So he comes running in, you know, glass of water. I can see the playground settling to the bottom, you know, of the glass. Here, Dad. You know what I did? I drank it. Don't even think about it. Oh, I say, wonderful, son. Thanks much. And I hug him and, you know, think, what a remarkable child. Isn't that great? Brings me back. What a great kid. Now, why is that? I mean, her thumb was a lot cleaner than his. Far less germs on her thumb than on this lad's here. You know, my boy, he has a turtle and lizards and a snake and tadpoles and the lizards. And they're all out in the garage romping around. He's out playing with them, you know. And I know good and well her thumb is cleaner than his, but... Well, I grab that water and drink it down. And why do I do that? Well, now, there's a relationship that I have with this boy that, you know, that I hardly, and this woman, she just, you know, somebody waiting on tables. But this is my boy. And I drink that water. See, God looks upon us as his children. We are his children. As a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. He knoweth our frame. Now get this, be encouraged. He knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. He knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. Some time ago, Dennis the Menace walked out of the house and said, Mom, I'm going to make you a Valentine, or I'm making you a Valentine. And the mother was busy fiddling with the, you know, the little plants and the flowers, and oh, she was out doing some kind of work in the yard, and she says, great, honey. And then that startled look on her face, and she says to herself, did he say he was making me a Valentine? So the next frame sure goes running into the house with a terrified look, and sure enough, that it's happened. The Valentine has been cut out of a piece of paper, but in doing so, the lace tablecloth got cut, you see. And the ink is spilled. And the lipstick that he used to write, I love you, Mama, is, you know. And there is this mess. The next frame shows her looking at him, and he's holding up his Valentine with that, you know, that cherub look, that innocent little look that kid has on his face. And he says, here, Mama, I give you this because I love you. And then the next frame shows her kneeling down, and little Dennis is saying, Mama, why are you squeezing me so hard? And the last frame says, because I love you too, Dennis. Now, what did the kid do anyhow? Well, he wrecked the tablecloth. He got ink all over the rug. He ruined a good lipstick for her that she may have paid a couple bucks for. But here she is, down on her knees, hugging that lad, and she says, Dennis, I love you too. And she accepted it. She took it. Why did she do that? Because of this fantastic relationship that develops between a parent and a child. And by the way, just as an aside, I don't think I'm supposed to talk on witnessing, but just as an aside, for those of you that think you're not professional evangelists, and you don't know how to give your testimony, or you don't know how to share the gospel or something. Most of us, in our service for Christ, whatever it is, we're a bunch of Dennis's the Menaces running around down here, completely fouled up, and God knows it. As a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pity them that fear him. He knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. So we go out to perform some little service for the Lord, you see, and we say, here, Lord, this is for you.
And the Lord kneels down and says, great, son.
Just great, you know. Oh, what a deal, huh? We really got something going here. You know that? What a wonderful thing. It's a relationship that we can't even comprehend. When Jesus said, when ye pray, say, Our Father. But remember this. Anything that you do for God or for anybody out of a sense of duty has absolutely no moral value connected with it. None whatsoever. My wedding anniversary rolls around. So I go down, I get the roses. I pay the man. I bring him out. I say, here they are. Roses. Every year, roses. Right on time, boy. Never fail. I feel it's my job, my duty. I've been giving you roses for 20 years, and here's another batch of roses. How's that go over? My wedding anniversary rolls around. I forget it. 3 days later, I get that sinking feeling. And I look at the calendar of my watch, and I thought, oh, it could be wrong. So I checked the one on my success diary, it could be wrong. But sure enough, 3 days late. Oh, man. So I go downtown, and I get a batch of roses, and I put them behind me. And I go out there, and I say, Virginia, I'm really sorry. And I don't know, I have no idea how you put up with the likes of me. But I brought you these because I love you. And I know they're late, and I apologize for that. And I just, all I could do is ask your forgiveness and want you to know that I brought them out to you because I really love you. How's that go over? Man, does that go over? I mean, you know, it really goes over. Why? I was 3 days late. Why, the first instance, I was right on time, just like clockwork. You know? Duty. Just plain old duty. The first instance, I was on time. The second instance, I was late. But my motivation was love. And it was accepted. Now, this morning's topic, as you know, is on obedience. The basis of all obedience is love. And now I'd like to have you look for me, with me for a minute at God's basis of obedience from His vantage point. I saw this when I was down in Australia. Had most mornings free down there. I just put my feet up and sat back in a chair there and just read and read and read. By the way, I came across the greatest reading program on earth. I mean, the greatest Bible reading program I've ever found, put out by some Australian down there. I'm going to have the whole region reading on one reading program this year. It's really a wonderful thing. I'd never had a reading program that worked for me before. I got one now. But while I was reading, I came across something back in the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 20. So I just paused and that morning did a study on it. So on the Ten Commandments, and it seems to me that what God did when He brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, He put them through a training program, and He taught them various lessons at various stages of their life. And by the time that He was through with them, these people had been transformed from a nation of slaves who were completely downtrodden, their spirits were broken, they were broken in their will and everything, to a nation of conquerors. And in their process here, there were certain periods of intensive training, faith and courage and obedience and worship and all these things He laid out for them. And one of them was in chapter 20. And I don't want to go through the whole Ten Commandments with you, but I'd like to show you something, just the first couple of verses. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Now, I want you to remember that. When I lay out some commandments for you, I want you to remember the basis upon which I give you these commandments and who is giving them to you. I, the Lord, am giving you these commandments. And I'm giving you them on the basis
of the demonstration of my love to you and my grace to you and my mercy to you. I'm the Lord thy God that brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of slavery, out of bondage, out of the most miserable existence of people probably have ever seen. I am the Lord thy God that brought thee out of that. And on the basis of this love and this mercy and this grace, and of course, you know, mercy is that character of God that keeps from us all that we have coming. And grace is that character of God which gives us all that which we have no right to. The mercy of God keeps from us everything that we have coming to us because of our sin and our rebellion and our stupidity and all the rest. And then God's grace is that which gives us all that which we have no right to at all. On that basis, I'm going to give you these commandments. The love, the mercy, and the grace of God. And every commandment of God is based on His love for you. And is based on His grace and mercy that He extends toward you. That's why it says in the Scriptures, the commands of God are not grievous. Because they're given out of a heart of love. Now, to the person, therefore, who will respond to the commands of Christ and live a life of obedience to the Word of God, God makes some promises to us if we will do that, that are big and that are important and that are good. Now, there are some, all the promises of God are big. Some promises are big, bad promises. For instance, to the man who has pride, who lives in pride and a haughty attitude toward God, God makes certain promises to that man, none of which are good. To the man who determines to live in sin, God makes certain promises to that man, none of which are good. But to the man who walks in a cheerful fellowship with the Lord, God makes certain promises to him, all of which are good. Now look at Leviticus chapter 9, verse 6. Leviticus 9, 6. And I'd like to cross-reference it with a New Testament verse. And Moses said, "This is the thing which the Lord commanded that ye should do, and the glory of the Lord shall appear unto you." Now look at John 14, 21. John 14, 21. "He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father. And I will love him and will manifest myself to him. And the glory of the Lord shall appear unto you. And I will love him and will manifest myself to him." To the person who will walk in fellowship with Christ, He promises His manifest presence in our lives. "Will manifest myself to him. The glory of the Lord shall appear unto him." Now, as we walk in fellowship with the Lord, and as we walk in obedience to Christ, there comes certain, all the vicissitudes of life, certain things come our way that are not good, but are bad. It can come in the form of sickness. It can come in the form of some financial trouble. It can come in the form of some family trouble. It can come in any form, you know, that God chooses to bring it our way. And by the way, when a man says, "I love God," God will give him a chance to prove that. God loves to give men the chance to, you know, demonstrate these truths. But the presence of Christ is promised to the man who will walk in fellowship with Him. Now look at Romans chapter 5. Because this fact of the presence of Christ, sensing the presence of Christ in this thing with me, Romans 5:1, therefore being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. The word justify, I understand, is a legal term. It's a legal act. It's the righteousness of God which He imparts to us through nothing of our own. By whom also we have access by faith into this grace. And by the way the word access assumes that it is not always ours. We have access to it. Into this state of grace wherein we stand, and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. And not only so, but we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation worketh patience. Now I looked this up. The word tribulation has the idea of pressure. It has the idea of the grinding stones, pressure, tribulations. And the word patience has the idea of endurance. Now we must face the fact that God is not so much interested in our comfort as He is in our being transformed into the image of Christ. When I had guys in my home back in the Midwest, I used to sit down with them and I'd talk to them and I'd say, now, guys, objectively, I really don't care whether or not you have a happy life or a life with some difficulties. My main objective for you guys is that you might become real men of God. Well, now, that was true, as far as I know. Then I say to myself, if that's true with these guys, is it true with my own children? No, it's not true with my own children. I would do anything to keep my children from having hard times and difficulties. But I've got to come to the place where I say, it has to be true with my own kids. Well, if it's true with my own kids, is it true with my wife? No, it's not true with my wife. I would do anything to keep trials and tribulation and sorrow or pain or anything from my wife. But if it's true with the kids, then I have to come to the place where it's true with... Well, then if it's true with my wife, is it true with Leroy? No, 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 no. If there's one thing Leroy doesn't like, it's trouble or tribulation or pain or sorrow or any of this. I like a bed of roses. I like life to be one great big bowl of cherries. That's what I like. And just let me float through it with no trouble whatsoever. But I have found that life isn't like that. That isn't necessarily the way life really is. And the winds come. The winds of adversity come. And we've seen them come around here. Some of these big stalwart trees, we've seen them bend. Now, when they're bending, and if it hasn't come your way, cheer up. It will. So you will all face this. It's all promised in here. Because it's the only way that God builds endurance in His children. You look that up sometime, and you'll find that the only way that God builds this quality of endurance in your life and mine, the thing to stick it through to the end, is through trouble and tribulation and trials. I wish there were another route. I'd take it. I'd be the first one to volunteer. But there is none. But when they come, and if my life of fellowship is such and my heart is really toward the Lord, through all these things, God promises to manifest Himself in them. And the glory of the Lord shall appear unto us, even in those things. And that could be the most important thing in life. The fact that God Himself. But this does not come to the casual observer in Christianity. The one who is just sort of involved. Because I've seen this. And you have too. When something comes their way, it turns them away from God. Why did He bring this my way? If there is a God, you know. But to the other one. Some of you know Lila Trotman. And know some of the pain that she suffered. Know some of this and some of that. What has it done to Lila? It has drawn her so close to the Lord, you know. You're in her presence and it's just a blessed thing to be there. And God built things in her life through hard times and trials and adversity. When I was overseas, I learned that clay, when you put it into the fire, it has all the colors in it, every one. Now, they're kind of muted, but they're there. And the thing is heated up about 7 times hotter than it ought to be, I understand. I don't know much about clay and all like this, but when they heat it, it really gets hot. Then they bring it out, and it glows. Now, the colors were there all the time, you see. But now it shines, and it glows with brilliance and color. What happened to that thing? The same thing happened to that thing that happens to the Christian who was walking in fellowship with the Lord, and whether it's a sunny day or a windy day, whether it's cloudless or hail, if the man is walking in fellowship with Christ, the presence of the Lord, the manifest presence of Jesus Christ going with him, he comes out of that experience with more of the beauty and radiance of Christ showing through his life. And that happens. But that does not come to the casual observer, to the one who is walking back over here, sort of obeying the Lord when he feels like it. But that comes to the man who really has his heart set on God. As the hart, the young animal, this young deer, panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. So living a life of obedience to Jesus Christ is not sort of a take it or leave it proposition. This is a thing that if we determine in our own hearts that this is the way that we will walk, the rewards of such a walk are so far superior to anything that it might cost us that there's no point even talking about it. No point at all. Now as we close this, I just jotted this down. Because that's quite a promise, you see. The promise of the manifest presence of Jesus Christ. And I think there's been times in my life when that one thing right there meant more to me than anything else I could think of. The fact that the Lord was with me. But as we walk in obedience to the Lord, could we pray that our lives would be such that we would not quench the Spirit in any form of service that he would like to lead us out into? As Dick talked to us about last night, the place where he has you see. Through some misinterpretation or misunderstanding or something or else, you can misunderstand what he wants to do, and you can quench the Spirit's activities in that office or on that oil field or wherever it is he has you. Or you can grieve the Spirit by some inner problem in your own life that you're just unwilling to get out on the table and talk it over with God. Now those two things, as you think about where you are and your current walk with the Lord and where he has you stationed, it seems to me that while we're around Glen Eyrie, we have the afternoons free and so on, it might be good to get off over here into one of these trees and sit down and reflect. Reflect on the fact that the seed, that you're that seed. And the field is the world and where God has you. And what you are doing or not doing through either some problem or another in your service for Christ. And thus quenching the Spirit. Or something down in your life, an unconfessed sin or something, that's keeping you from any kind of productivity for the Lord, any kind of fruitful service for the Lord, because of something that you're just unwilling to face with God. We've got a whole week here. It's a nice, quiet place. This might be the place to really deal and do business with God. Let me give you one other verse. Numbers 33:55. This is one that I made make required memorizing for all the guys who work with us on our team. Numbers 33:55. But if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those that you let remain shall be as pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. Now, do you know what happens when you get a thorn in your eye or a prick in your eye? Your vision is clouded. You don't see properly. And I've watched this happen with guys who have something down in their life that they're not willing to face. Their vision becomes all clouded spiritually. They have no real vision of a service for Christ. Or a thorn in their side. It's almost as if their forward progress is completely impeded and they're limping along on about half steam because they've got something down in their life that they're unwilling to face with Christ. And it shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. It'll be a constant vexation. It'll be a constant nagging. There it'll be. Obedience? Well, there's a little song that says, "Trust and obey, for there is no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey." But the thing you've got to remember in all of this is that God's commands are given out of a heart of love and grace and mercy. And our response to those commands must be on the basis of a unique relationship with God as a Father and a heart of love and not a sense of duty.